This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 24 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
So how are you doing, Sam?
Present and accounted for. I've just finished Binge Fest, hashtag Binge Fest ADOW 2019.
Does that mean you're only going to do one?
No, it's the second annual, the second of this year. It's the second Binge Fest of 2019. Well, the first one was kind of stretched out over a couple of days, but this is the first, like.
But the second binge of this show, you mean?
Correct, of the show. And end to end of this episode in one day.
Holy mocus. And is there someone there with you that we need to?
Potentially. If you ask her nicely, she might talk.
Oh, girl. She's your guest. I mean, she's staying with you.
She's also your guest.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Please tell us your name.
This is Mandy.
Hi, Mandy. That was the best intro ever.
She's fresh out of Foxes.
I've been awake since 5 a.m. We've watched 8 episodes of A Discovery of Witches, and I had a big, huge mug of wine.
It's true.
Oh, Lord.
You did not have a mug, though you do clearly call wine glasses mugs. I had a stemless wine glass and a coffee mug. And I said, which one would you like, the glass or the mug? And as she reached for the glass, she said the mug.
Uh-oh. My body is on East Coast time.
So I like the foxes thing. I don't know if it was today or yesterday. And I don't know if it was in a chat, like a group chat we had going on, or it was on Twitter. I don't know where I saw it.
I said it on the podcast yesterday.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Did I have the same reaction?
Yes.
Oh, Lord. I can't even remember the reactions I have. So I like that. I have never heard that ever. Where did you hear it?
All over the place.
Like how long? Like have you heard it for years?
At least the last 2 years.
Really?
At least. Yeah, at least.
Oh, man. Shows you how slow I am. Not slow. Slow in the pickup, maybe. But I just don't get around, I guess.
No comment.
Okay, so we have Mandy here and, of course, Summer here. And what are we here to talk about in this episode, Sam?
I believe we have gathered here today
to talk
specifically about episode 102 of A Discovery of Witches, which I have watched today 1.4 times.
Oh, you really like timed it down to the minute, girl.
Well, no, I watched it fully once, but then I only made it just under halfway through the second time through before we started recording. So I was just trying to make sure that I cemented some facts because I didn't want to start talking about all of the episodes that happen after accidentally. So trying to keep it straight.
I know a thing or two about that. Trying to keep things not in the convo. Things slip in like a boob.
Nope. Boobs never slip into anything.
No.
They totally did. You don't remember what I'm talking about?
Clearly I don't.
Okay. When we got screeners for Outlander season 3, we got the first 6 dropped at one time.
I remember.
And on our live after show.
We started talking about the sex scene on like the third episode in the
no,
first one.
No, it wasn't was a sex like, scene. It wasn't a sex scene. She was nursing a baby. So it was episode 2 and we were talking about episode 1. And no one mentioned anything. And I came out on camera like, I can't take this back. And I said, but what did nothing like, I wonder about the boobs or something like that. Or did you guys see her boobs? Or I don't know, something like that. And there was like dead silence.
I'm pretty sure my eyes got real big because I was like,
no. But I was like, people are, you know, there's always the delay between us, what we say, and then people actually reacting to the comments because of the magicalness of the internets and everything. When people came back, they were like, huh? Boobs? Did I miss boobs? How did I miss boobs? So, yes, boobs can slip in,
no.
But there's no danger because the whole world got all 8 at one time. So, U.S. and Canada, most recently, I should say, not the whole world. Okay, so we promised no boobs, although Mandy may have a comment.
I'm not making that promise.
Okay, sorry.
I I've always got my boobs.
Oh, well, I mean, okay, yes.
Mandy just silently
eye rolled.
Have enough, everybody.
No, she just silently motioned to her boobs.
Oh, Lord. Got it. Okay, so at the end of 101, we left Matthew feeling his nearly uncontrollable feelings for or some reaction to Diana, telling her to, they were along outside the boathouse, along the river.
Telling her, walk, don't run, so don't make any sudden moves, and don't turn around.
Exactly, and she does. So 102 is could it be more different? It opens in Venezia.
It's a cold open. And it actually looked pretty warm there. They were all in tank tops.
I was going to say, Juliet doesn't seem to wear a lot of clothes. Mm-mm.
No. Well, if I had that body, would I? I don't know all that.
Heck no. She hands down has the best hair and clothes of the show.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Yes. So 102 opens in Venice. We're introduced to Juliette Durand, who's a vampire. We learned real quick. I did find it interesting. Okay, not complaining, just curious that although she's a vampire, maybe you guys know more than I, a lot of people could know better than I about how old she is. We're not told that, at least in the episode. I don't know if we know in the books and I've just forgotten. But when a vampire, Deb has spoken about this a little bit regarding Marcus and Times Convert and all this stuff. When a vampire is a certain age or has lived for hundreds of years, especially if they've kind of, you know, they were maybe born in one country and then they're reborn and then they move or spend a lot of time, say, in another country, their accent can adapt to, or doesn't have to, but they may adapt to that location. The reason I bring that up is because she's very French or at least the name is very French. And she has a very English accent.
So does Marcus.
That I just said. Deb has talked about that. He's American. Though
I know, I'm just saying, no one mentioned it last episode.
We didn't have Juliet last.
No, but we had Marcus with a
but
very.
But Marcus's name doesn't sound like it's a different language. Is what I'm
doesn't
saying.
Doesn't matter. He as a character had his beginnings in colonial America.
Yes, and I don't think the viewer knows that if you haven't read the books, because we don't get Marcus's story or much of it. Anyway, Marcus sounds like an English name, whether it's American English or British English. It doesn't necessarily jump out one way or the other. Juliet. And we don't see it, to be fair, we don't see it written. So we only know it's Juliet. So there's nothing telling us that she should be this or should be that. But only because of the book do I know it's a French name. And that's where I was like, huh, okay.
I thought he found her in a brothel in Algiers or somewhere.
Oh, very probably. Possible. She's, very possible. But that, she's still a French colony.
But the accent would be fine.
Yeah. So, okay, so someone we were introduced, or at least shown, Juliet, someone calls the name Mathieu, and that gets her attention. Now, it's interesting, okay, forget the fact that she's French, although maybe not, or has a French name, I guess I could put it that way. Again, we're not given much of her background. I guess the name in any variation would get her attention, but... we don't get a lot yet, at least in episode one or two, of the background of Matthew, Professor Claremont. Anyway, she hears the name Mathieu, which of course is French, is the French form of Matthew, and it gets her attention. And she looks up, she sees this person, and she focuses on him. And I love that the music we hear in the background is the one pill makes you bigger, one pill makes you small. it's like Eat Me, Drink Me from...
Yeah, it's The White Rabbit is the song. It's originally by, I believe, Jefferson Starship. Or is it, no, it's just the woman. What's her name? Grace Slick.
So she gets his attention. They kind of make, you know, she makes... Nah, not googly eyes, but she definitely makes eyes at him and gets his attention.
Oh, I was right the first time. It is a Jefferson Airplane song, but it's sung by Grace. Okay.
And they, of course, go off together. She tells him, I used to know a Matthew. And then she bites him and then chases him. And
but I like how he's like, no, it's Matthew. And we were both like, not anymore. It's not.
Not anymore. It's not. It's Matthew, bitch.
Right?
I'll make you my Matthew, bitch. Sorry. Yes. So once she started not just the flirtation, but started like the biting part, and he's, you know, seen her, he knows what she is, even if he doesn't know, you know, logically, like, what is this, you know, crazy person doing? That she must be into like some real kink or something.
She didn't put enough thought into her repertoire of what she was doing, because he had his pants down. But I think if she'd let him fully engage, she would have gotten away with a full biting in the one setting without having to chase her food. But maybe she wanted to chase her food. I don't know. But he literally pulling his pants up after the first bite and running away.
Yeah, vampires are predators, right? So if you run, that's what Matthew was saying. If you run, it will attract them even more. So I believe it excited, whether she wanted him to or not, it definitely excited her even more. So she follows him, obviously. But what I wrote was she basically, she wants him. She wants to do all the things, but she basically has to clean up. Once they're done with whatever they're doing, she's going to have to clean up her mess. So now that he's seen her, not seen her face, but seen her, like the fact that he knows she's biting. If they had just had sex, I don't think she could have stopped it herself from biting him or, you know, going full vamp on him. But if they had just had sex, she wouldn't have necessarily had to dispose of him. But once she did the biting thing, yeah, it was okay. May as well just get my dollies because he's got to die anyway. The direct switch from seeing Juliet rip open Mathieu's shirt and go for his chest, I'm guessing, because we don't see him.
She went like right for his heart. Like
right for his heart, yeah. And we go right from that to it begins with absence and desire.
Yeah, to the voiceover.
It's quite fitting.
One of the recurring themes or recurring devices in this series is the repetition or the echoing of two different situations. So we go from basically Juliet stalking and bringing down her prey to Matthew, you know, going to Scotland and stalking and bringing down his prey.
Absolutely. We get our beautiful opening music. And of course, Matthew finishes the VO over a shot of the hills.
I have done that drive through the Lake District, which is right there next to Wales, you know, on the way to Scotland. And I mean, it really is Scotland in miniature.
Matthew, we're in Scotland slash not Scotland. We're in Wales. We're in Scotland in the show. We're in Scotland. And Matthew has driven up and he is visiting his very good friend, Hamish, who is a demon and a Scot. He says he had to get away from Oxford after his close call with Diana. And I love this line. As he's inside, you know, their greeting or whatever, and he looks up, and apparently Hamish is just like, either Hamish is just redone or redecorated, or it's been a while since Matthew's been there, or maybe he hasn't been to this location. But he looks up and he says, "It looks like a wedding cake."
Mm-hmm. I love the way Matthew delivers that line.
He says, "Get his little dig in." And I love it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Hamish is the only person to call Matthew Matt.
I think so. But I love the way he responds to that line and said, "Did you come up all this way just to diss my interior?"
I forgot. I didn't write that down. I forgot that. Now Hamish knows this is serious. Matthew is saying, "I came up here to get away from a witch."
Mm-hmm. I'm craving
her. And he's like, "What do you mean?" And he says, "I am craving her." So for him to say, "What do you mean?" Hamish knows right away the fact that he came up there like lickety-split was crazy town. Not necessarily impossible for him, but it reflected the urgency that Matthew had. And now we're in Oxford. This is the first time we see Diana in this episode. She's asleep in her bed. The covers are over her and she is dreaming. Or is it a nightmare? She's dreaming that she is covered in spider webbing.
Say, spider in my web. Books, if it involves spiders and spider webs, it's a nightmare.
Oh, right? Now, when you guys saw that and the spider showed, well, not the thing crawling underneath, where you just see like the bubble moving.
Yeah, that was a crossover to like every like anime tentacle naughty movie. Like there's just
summer.
There's a whole genre of like adult movies that's like called tentacle porn. It's not cool. Gosh. Anyway, but just seeing like something, don't do it. Don't ask me. But just seeing something like crawling under the bed towards your face, I'm not into that.
And then when she brought, I'm like, surely they're gonna like have her wake up before she sees it. Like, nope, they're gonna show us. So when you guys saw this, I guess Summer just answered. Did it freak you out? In other words, are you anti spider?
I'm not in favor of seeing it all that much, but I thought that was something that came in the adaptation, but I was re-listening not too long ago. And I think there are references in the book to her dreaming about, dreaming about being caught in spider webs.
Oh, okay. Or bound in some way, maybe.
Right.
Okay. I'll have to definitely see
spellbound
after this.
In some way.
Imagine that.
What? Summer, you stop it. You take your tentacles and go home.
I can't. They're a part of me.
I'm going to have
apparently not.
Do yourself a favor and don't Google it.
I'm not.
You'll regret it. You can't unsee it. You can't unsee it.
I don't ever want to. So after, when we're done with the series, and I don't mean just like here on our show, because I do plan on, you know, I will watch all eight again. However, over the next few weeks, as we continue to record and then publish, you know, our episode discussions for this adaptation, I totally will watch each one, not just to take notes, but also to, you know, get through it again, because I want to see them like as an arc. I want to see everything together. But when we're done with this series, like finishing episode 108, I have to go back. I mean, I know we will go back to our read along, we promise. But I want to go back and read the book, because like Mandy was saying, like there's stuff that could very well have been there that they like made, like brought forward more.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Oh my gosh. It makes me definitely have to go back and read it.
Well, I mean, and one of the things I'm loving, I mean, even you can see this in episode two with the opening in Venice, they're making me care about things and people that I didn't care about in the book. You know, because you didn't see it happen. And so.
Oh, my. Yes. And I tweeted about this the other day. And I know this is not the first time we've talked about it. It's not the first time. Well, you know, Deb's talked about it from the beginning. And I know people. Some of the things that, and I hate to say lose, but I mean, I guess you always will lose stuff. So some of the things people say, oh, you know, we didn't get, and this is not a spoiler because it's not included. So unless you read the book, you won't know what I'm talking about. We didn't get the yoga scene, right? Or we didn't get the this, or we didn't get the that. People are going to notice, well, book readers will say, oh, well, we didn't get this, or we didn't get that. However, and of course, that's part and parcel of any adaptation, period, full stop. However, if you look, and this is going off of what Mandy just said, if you look, especially after eight episodes, and not just two, but even by two, it's already happening. Look at the stuff we get that is not in the book. It's very possibly off stage, off page. It's not anti the book, right? It's further development showing us stuff, as Mandy said, making us care about the people who just show up, whom we see through Diana's eyes. And that to me is so exciting, because I don't care for all the people in the book the same way.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there were people, I mean, that, yeah, I mean, you just, they were very, I don't want to say one dimensional. I mean, because it's not that they were written badly. It's just, they weren't really written about at all. They were just very tangential to the story. But the other thing that I think enough people don't understand about adaptations when they complain about what is or isn't in is, you know, they have a finite amount of money. And they can choose where to spend that money. And so they can do a few things really well, or they can try to include everything
poorly.
And so.
Well, it's money. And I think at the end of the day, it all kind of comes down to money. Even the next thing I'm going to say, but it's also time. When you're given eight episodes, your first parameter is, oh, Lord, yes, we have a budget. So the budget is going to tell you, you know, what you can spend on certain things, or how, as you said, how well you can adapt, you know, visually represent certain things. But if you're also, say, by a network or by whoever, you know, whoever's whatever channel you're being made for, if you will, if you start out with a certain number of episodes and you know they're all 40 minutes or whatever it is, you have limited time. So it's not, it is money. At the end of the day, time is money. I get that. But, and I think they're so inextricably linked that you can't even talk about them separately. But as far as time goes, there is no way to get every little bit.
No, there's not. But what I am hoping is going to happen is, you know, we're very fortunate. We already know that there will be season two and three, is that it'll happen like happened with Game of Thrones. You know, Game of Thrones didn't start out with the huge full-scale budget. It was a much lower budget production in the first season or so, and it got bigger from there. I'm hoping, as popular as this has proved to be, that there will be more episodes potentially and more budget for season two and three.
Did I not read somewhere that Deb, nothing is confirmed, so please do not take that away from this, dear listener. Did I read that Deb said it was a possibility?
She said nothing was set yet. I can't remember if it was on her Facebook Live or if it was on Twitter, but somewhere she said the number of episodes for season two is yet to be determined. So that to me says it's not, you know, it's not written in stone. There's only eight. And I'm pretty sure that's what they were saying earlier. So to me, that now means that maybe there's a chance of going a little bit bigger. So we just need a lot of people to go out there and subscribe to Sundance Now and Shudder.
Yes.
So that they can have more money to,
well,
to
now,
make a longer
Sundance
season.
Now and Shudder do not pay for the production of
well, they do
the show because they bought in later.
Right. But I guarantee you the money that they pay will go back into having more money for future seasons. So if it's driving up and they see that the show is popular, then that's going to, funnel indirectly back into the production. Because
it's true, but buying the rights is not the same as producing the show.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But we have seen networks go in a partnership before. I mean, look at the first season of The White Queen. That was a partnership between Starz and BBC. So there is, the potential that Sundance could kick in and that would give a higher budget.
Diana, after she wakes up, the next scene we see her is she's still caring. She's rewrapping, or her hand is wrapped. She's still caring for her burn, obviously. And she picks up Matthew's card. Is it on her desk or in a bag? I just wrote down that she picked
up.
On her desk. Picks up the card. And we get more of the beautiful theme. I think it's the da da da. I think that's it. I could be wrong.
That means nothing to anyone but you.
Yeah, okay, I couldn't tell things.
Sorry. So cue the eye roll from the other side of the microphone as we all go, what? Oh.
Summer, stop it. She goes down. I thought she was going to pick up her mail, but I mean, she goes to the mail area.
Speaking of mail, we want to know how she got the biggest mail slot.
Seriously.
All those little flat slots.
It's a cubby. Yeah. How does she get the best cubby?
Because I was thinking, I was like, we were like, well, maybe, because she just had the big sweatshirt, it looked better to have it in the big one. But then I'm like, I've been watching a lot of Marie Kondo, and they could totally have folded that sweater smaller.
Although I will say, my rationale in my mind behind this is I have a friend whose husband is going to be a visiting research fellow in Cambridge next year, or this year now. And apparently they get first pick of all the rooms available. So maybe they get first pick of the mail slots too.
So you're telling me she picked the room that had a sink right next to her head in the bedroom?
Except if you look, the bed keeps moving.
So oh my gosh.
She didn't like it.
It's not safe. I would not be safe sleeping with my face that
not
close to a sink.
Spiders crawling on me.
Oh my gosh. So after she sees that she has vampire mail, Matthew, whether himself or through someone else, has returned her sweater. Then we're back to Venice and we meet the full name of Domenico Michele. And dude, the swagger on him.
So dude, did he come across as sexy in the book? Because if it did, it went completely over my head. And he is sex on legs in the show.
He wasn't anti-sexy to me. Like, I never thought of him and went, I just didn't have, I was kind of just like, not flat. I didn't think of him in either way, really. I just thought, oh, okay, Domenico's a character. But holy dudes. I mean, did you just say sex on legs?
I did.
She did.
Oh, Lord.
See, but my issue isn't so much, I'm not saying he's not sex on legs or good looking or, screen worthy or melty or whatever. He's all these things. However, I can't ever remember his name because I keep combining Fernando and Domenico together. And in my brain, I'm like, is his name Frederico? Is that his name?
I thought you were going to say Ferminico.
That's what I said.
But I'm like, is it Frederico? And she's like, Domenico? And I was like, right, Domenico, right.
Oh my gosh, but his swagger, dude. So he goes into the morgue, into a morgue, and he's looking for the body of a tourist, he says. And this is, of course, Mathieu, we learn. Just as predicted, he tells the guy, he's like, you can't be here. And he says, in 3 minutes or 3 seconds, someone's going to call. Or a certain amount of seconds, your boss is going to call. And sure enough, he did. And he gives Domenico, the morgue dude, morgue watcher or whatever, gatekeeper, gives Domenico access. Now, Domenico learns that the body has no blood in it and that there was no blood on the scene. So he's thinking, of course, oh, Lord, it's Vamp. Oh, Lord, it's Vamp. Now, when the morgue dude walks away, Domenico very quickly bends over to smell the body.
Yeah. Creepy. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain that away. Like, if he'd come back too soon, and he heard him. He could hear him the whole time. But could you imagine? How do you explain that?
Oh, Lord. So the morgue dude shares that the young man, Mathieu, was French. He turns his head sharply when he says the name. Did you guys note that? When he says Mathieu, the medical's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And this means something to him. We don't know what it means yet, but it means something to him too. And then he says, Matthew. And then we're off to Scotland, actually Wales. We're driving with Matthew and Hamish. And it's a different look, him, Matthew, in a skull cap. It's a different look.
Yeah, not quite my favorite. I like his rumpled hair look the best.
I think he's very attractive when his hair is very, you know, straight and well kept, well combed. But when it comes out of its straightness or out of its really, you know, combed away, combed to the side, and it kind of, you get a little bit in the front and a little bit on the side, disheveled. Mm. Holy smokes.
He needs it to balance out the proportion of his frame, because now I'm not criticizing, but I just think his head is a little bit small for the rest of his body, and he needs volume in his hair to balance that out.
Matthew has sighted a stag. And of course, we know, we understand that he's hungry. Hamish is all, ah, got it. He's like, yes, carry on.
He's not hungry. He's trying to get the stalking out of his system.
Well, okay, fair enough. He needs to run off. I don't want to say run off the energy, but run off the, well, I guess the energy, the frustration that he has. Basically, he has blue balls.
Okay. I think it's more like blue fangs. I think he really wants to bite her.
No, yeah, but it's all tied up with, but it's still sexual to them. And I'm not saying he has to have sex with someone if he wants to bite them or vice versa. But it's all, the feeling he has is, I think he wants to do all the things to her. But most importantly, he wants to bite her. So the stag senses a vamp, or at least a predator. But of course, he's no match for Matthew. Swish, swish back. I don't know where that came from. Switch back to the Bodleian. Diana notes she's in there working, and she notes that it's quite busy in there. And the students aren't back yet. So this means there's a lot of creatures in there. And did you guys catch something? I don't know if it's like a nod to book readers, but as she's walking past the tables, the camera sticks on some red or red brown cowboy boots.
Oh, that is absolutely a nod to the...
I guess not an Easter egg, but...
Well, I think it's an Easter egg, yeah.
Back to Scotland. He's still hunting. Back to the Bodleian. Note the music as we get to... As we go back and forth between the settings is very fast-paced, because in general, not just in one place. But then we're back to Scotland. Matthew has the stag in his trance. Back to the Bodleian. Peter Knox introduces himself to Diana. He's not creepy at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. He knows, but he tells her and notes with her that, oh, you know, there's all these other creatures. And he mentions Ashmole. And she says, I'm sorry, I'm waiting on a book. Like, that's, he's, you've been dismissed. She does not want to interact. And he responds, I assure you, I'm a friend.
Anytime somebody has to tell you that they're a friend, you know, you should really just assume the opposite.
Exactly. And then back in Scotland, Matthew gets the stag to lie down and take it like a stag.
That's not a term.
I just did it.
Saying it with your NPR sex voice doesn't make it a thing.
Summer, I don't have an NPR sex
voice. Oh, yes, are you sure about that?
Stop!
Feel free, when you edit this later, to go back and listen to how you said that. And then try to tell me you don't.
Stop it. That's not, that's weird.
Yeah, okay. It is. It's real weird. Stop doing it.
Back in the Bodleian, Creep Meister continues. Shall we discuss this over coffee? Or are you a tea drinker like your mother was?
Full disclosure, if somebody said that to me, that would have made it more skeevy, not less skeevy.
Yeah, but apparently Diana's a tea slut. So if he promises her tea, she will go anywhere.
He didn't even have to double down with toast.
No. Just
he's a weirdo and he's freaky, like you said. But if someone has to tell you, I'm your friend, that's like a sign or a flag.
No,
a red
but
flag.
Here's the thing. The way he approached her was creepy. And then to double down on the, or do you like it like your mom liked it? That's creepy too. Now, granted, he said, are you a tea drinker like your mom? But I think that makes him more sketchy, because her mom is dead.
Exactly. So it's not,
and she was murdered. So if there's any other clue that we need to future episodes, it's in this scene right here.
You should have listened to your gut.
Right? Not your tea.
Not your tea.
Oopsie, now he's got her. So he got her with the tea and her mama line. Back to Scotland. Matthew is eating or drinking, whatever, the stag.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the tea thing. That's like a dude showing up at your school and saying,
My mom, your mom told me to pick you up. Mm-hmm. Your mom told, yeah, your mom called me. Your mom's in the hospital and I need to take you to your mom at the hospital. Your mom told me to come pick you up. Creepy adults. Even kids know better at this age.
It is creepy, but do you know what it reminds me of? With all this, and again, I'm not trying to get political, but with all this in an era of middle, I don't think we're past it quite. I think we're in the middle of it, but in an era of Me Too, it's like someone says, hey, you want to go on a date? Oh, no, thanks. No, but really, 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 I want to take you to this nice place. Nah, it's okay. I'm good.
Your mom let me take you to that nice place.
Let me take you to this place. No, but I truly think, if you just listen to me. If you truly think about it, I think you truly will like me. I really want to take you to this place. And there's this dish there that I believe you like. You'll love because, you know, your mom, it was a favorite of your mom's. I mean, it's not just creepy because he mentions her mom. Obviously, that's creep-tastical. But it's also like someone asking you. I don't know, he wasn't being romantic with her. But it's like someone asking you out and you're like, no, thanks. And then someone like not freaking taking no for an answer. I think I'm a little bit extra sensitive to this kind of messaging now. But holy balls. I was like, really? Really? Oy vey. Back in Oxford, Peter Knox and Diana are walking. Like I said, he got her with the mama and the tea and your mama line. Knox and Diana are walking to some cafe somewhere or tea house, whatever. But as they're walking, Knox tells, they chat about how he knew her mom. He says that he and Rebecca Bishop met as teens. He only slightly knew her mother, he says, but he says she was, quote, passionate, clever, stubborn as a mule when she wanted to be, unquote. He wanted to introduce himself over the years to Diana, but her aunts, .. He let that statement finish itself. And then they're having tea.
Don't spill the tea. She didn't spill the tea either. But when he started pressing for more information about what was in the book, that was, if all of the lead up to it, to that point, had not been like warning alarms, his like insistence on tell me what's in the book, I would have been like, okay, I'm not going to tell you anything that was in the book because you're really freaking me out right now.
Back to Scotland. Matthew feels so much better. And Hamish tells him that he thinks he's wise to keep his distance from the witch. But the problem is, Matthew says, she has something I need. And I wrote, yeah, she does.
She has several things he needs.
A lot of what he wants.
Right? What he really, really wants. Exactly. Back in Oxford, they're knocking back that tea. Knox tells Diana that Ashmole 782 is missing and has been missing for years. He tries to give... Okay, now that's not NPR's sex voice. That's like a children's reader voice, like a child storybook. Okay, gosh, Ginger, stop it. So he tries to give her... He tries to give a reason. Maybe the book only shows itself around the time of the equinox. And because of the magicalness or whatever, that's what happens. Or maybe there's a spell on it and you broke it. Talking to Diana. And he asks her then, what happened to your hand? And he grills her for what she saw. She's like, I only saw one page. And he grills her. What did you see? What was on it? What happened? Da, 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 da. And he says, this book could tell us how we, like, he so makes so many assumptions. Like, oh my gosh, the ego on this dude.
But that's like straight out of the book. Every different creature sept thinks that that book is theirs and that it is the secret of how they did X, Y, and Z and how they can do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, he says... It could tell us, since basically we created them, it could tell us how to uncreate them.
I was going to say, so we're going to talk about the fact that apparently for about two lines, Diana forgot she was American.
It happens every so once in a while. Absolutely.
It just was so blatant there for her.
But we've discovered that over time, that the word that she has the problem with is the word out.
Out.
She goes out. Yeah.
She flattens it.
She chews on it. Out.
I wonder how she says anything. I haven't listened. Nothing hasn't stuck out. I mean, I've heard what you guys are talking about. I haven't picked up on the words. I didn't like write down the words.
She says aunt. I know that.
And I wrote, don't let your crazy show, Mr. Knox. That's a bit bah. So as soon as he gets here, I mean, he was already bugging her. It was already obviously creepster. But as soon as he says this, Diana's like, yo, peace out. Diana won't have any part of that. He grabs her.
as she's about to leave and says she must try to get the book again. And he says, as she leaves, "I'm quite sure I'll see you again, Diana." And Satu comes in right then and he says to her, "We might need to use firmer tactics. Venezia. I love the Vaporetti. The water taxi? It's called a Vaporetti, or the plural is Vaporetti. Domenico comes in. He gets off the Vaporetti and he comes to see Gerbert.
I was really hoping there was going to be some outtakes of that scene because he jumped off of that moving boat.
Oh, right.
That could have gone horribly awry.
Maybe he didn't perfectly.
He might. I don't know.
I mean, he is kind of like
all the swagger.
Good Lord. He's like swagger sex on legs. I don't even know. Yes. So when we first see Gerbert, of course, they're introducing him. That's Trevor Reeve, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you have like the cameras like full up in his face. So we see this, you know, really well-known dude. So Domenico kisses his hand out of deference. And Juliet, who has let him into the room, leaves them.
She looks a little worried, though.
Hella worried. Yes. And then back to Oxford. Now, like, Diana gets around in a very... She has a lot of lunch. I mean, I guess that's what you do. So Diana is now having lunch with, or a meal or something, with Jillian.
Oh, is this the biscuit dunking contest?
Biscuit dunking contest.
Yes, 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 yes. Jillian tries to convince her to, you know, just get the book out again. And says, it's not our concern what Knox wants to do with the book. It's not our concern. Just do this for him. Her, quote, "these things get out."
Hmm. Meaning I told him.
Especially when you're the one that told him.
Diana's like, I wonder how he found out. And she's like, let me eat all the more biscuits so I can mumble this. Yeah, these things get out. It's rather telling, as we know, or as you will find out.
I wonder how many biscuits they had to eat in that scene for continuity's sake. So many biscuits.
I thought about making it a drinking game.
Right? We didn't have enough wine. We didn't
have enough wine. Under the table in 3 minutes.
Again, she says she doesn't want, Diana says she doesn't want anything to do with the book.
Anything? She doesn't want anything.
Summer. Quote, "I want to lead a normal life." Unquote. Uh-huh, Diana. That's a little bit late for that. That changed once you, no. Once you called 782, girlfriend, that's gone. Jillian says, get the book. Just get it. Have it done. Have it over with. Diana says that her vampire seemed to have given up on her, and also shares that he seemed to know more about the book than anyone else. And like, that'll go over well. Diana is a bit affronted that Jillian would think she knows all about vamps after one conversation. She makes an interesting observation. Quote, "he doesn't seem to be as prejudiced against us as we are against them." Unquote.
We? Is she, we, she's, I mean, limping. You. Yeah. And by we, I mean you, Jillian.
I know, but she does say we. I listened a few times, but yes, right? We? Really? Huh? Jillian has no answer for this. And I wrote, when in doubt, snack.
Biscuit.
When in doubt, biscuit. Diana is off to an awful, she says, an awful, awful Dean party. So I wrote down, Diana is off for an awful Dean party. Back to Scotland. I mean Wales, which is Escotland. Matthew says that even though Ashmole 782 might be the answer to their problems, his wanting it puts her in danger. Hamish is, once Matthew has described kind of what the book might be, what he thinks it might be, and the conundrum they're in now, and the possible danger, or no, not possible, the danger that Diana, increasing danger that Diana is in, Hamish is like, wow, well, if you want to go there, let's talk about demons. Demon suicides are on the rise and other problems. Quote, "we are struggling if this book could explain our origins." ... Unquote. So Hamish, and I guess other demons too, would also love to get some knowledge from this book. So now we've seen the witches want it. We know why. They want to, at least some of them, want to uncreate vampires, right?
There's a lot of pressure on this book to be all things to all people.
Everyone, exactly. And Dan is like, look, leave me out of this. You guys go get it. I just don't want to be part of this. And now the demons seem to want an answer. I mean, by demons, I mean Hamish. But he's, for now, he's our demon.
He's our token.
Our token demon, yes. So back to Oxford. In Matthew's lab, Marcus comes in, and James' results have come in and they are normal. So Marcus says, ah, so the problem is with me. meaning it confirmed that it was his bloodline or his vampire bloodline that was responsible for not being able to sire. Diana, we see an image of Diana. She's running. Of course, she's doing something. And then boom, right in the middle of a run, like Satu appears. And she says, what happened to your hand?
Why does she keep talking to strangers? I don't understand why she keeps talking to strangers.
I want to know why she's not wearing a better sports bra if she's going to be jogging like that. Because
here the
all I could do was hold mine down in sympathy because I'm like, that would hurt.
And she asks her about the book. And she really does like a number. I wouldn't say a number on Diana, but she reads as only a very powerful witch could or can. She reads Diana with her magic. And she says, magic attracts magic, but yours is hidden. And then she goes all eyeball-y. And
let's all watch this in the focus of, let's say we'd never seen Satu. Let's say if we had no prior knowledge of Satu as watchers.
Yeah.
How creepy is this scene? I'm off for a jog and some random lady in like a camo jacket stops me, rolls her eyes back and tries to tell me that my magic is attracting things and what's wrong with me. Who are you?
Turn around, run the other
way. Thank you. I would not have stood still that long and listened to this lady berate me.
She says, someone did this to you. Or you did it to yourself.
I mean, it reminds me of walking down the street in New York City and having there be one of those palm readers on the side of the road and have them be like, lady, I have your fortune. Come over. And you know what I do? I ignore them and I keep walking.
Don't make eye contact.
Thank you. Never.
Diana tells Satu, you won't get the book. I'm not going to get it out for you. You're not going to get it. And Satu knows things. She says, this isn't just about the book. It's about you. The next scene, I think she's back in her apartments. Diana calls Auntie M. I have to call her Annie M because, you know, Wizard of Oz. I just have
Annie
to.
Annie M.
Diana calls Auntie M. And she says, tell me about Knox. Mm-hmm. Well, Auntie M says, okay, fine. He was crazy about Rebecca. Yeah. So Knox saying, we knew each other, you know, vaguely when we were teens. Yeah, right. That's a straight up lie. So he was crazy about her. He tried to persuade her not to marry Philip Proctor. Quote, they were friends in the early days and then he just got into some.
His name's not Philip Proctor.
No, it's not. Steven.
Huh? Steven. It's not Philip Proctor.
Okay.
I'm not gonna.
That'll come out.
Better.
He tried to persuade her not to marry. Where did Philip come from?
Philippe, probably.
But maybe. He tried to persuade her not to marry Stephen Proctor. Quote, they were friends in the early days, and then he just got into some stuff. And of course, by that, she says dark magic. Now, she's curious why Knox is in Oxford at all. More importantly, though, she shares that both Diana's father and mother distrusted him. And she says, be careful of him, Diana.
I think right now she should be careful of everybody, okay?
Absolutely. Witches falling out of trees, dudes trying to like hit on you via your mama. I mean, so far the vampires, which they're all so prejudiced against, are the only ones that have treated her with like not creepy dangerousness.
I mean, all fairness, he still stalked her all over the place.
That's true. I'm so sorry. He was a creep. Sorry.
But at least he's doing it behind her back and not like in public in front of her.
I take it back. He is stalking the poop out of her.
He has paid no attention to her poop.
Okay. So now we're in Venezia. Back in Venezia. Gerbert reprimands Juliet. So what we can take from this is that when Domenico came to see Gerbert, he basically tattled. He smelled Juliet on the tourist and he knew it was a vampire because of how he died and what was and wasn't at the scene or on the body. And so Domenico comes to report it to Gerbert and Gerbert is now reprimanding Juliet. When Juliet comes into the room and Gerbert's sitting there and his legs are, you see his feet on the ground. Did you notice his socks? I love, it's like, he's like all somber and then bright red orange socks.
I did not look at his socks.
I love it.
No, I was too distracted by the fact that I was sitting there wondering, who is running around turning all these middle and older aged men into vampires? I have never watched a vampire show with so many like middle-aged vampires. Like, that is not the statistic I'm used to. I am used to the stereotype of the young, virile, hot, like Domenico and Matthew and even Marcus, because sometimes they skew younger, but you rarely see them skew older. So I scratched my head a lot. And Mandy was like, well, I just see him as the Pope. And I'm like, that's fine.
I think he made somebody do it. I think he wanted to live forever and he made somebody do it.
Gerbert has Juliet on a very short leash. He says, quote, if there's something I don't know, Baldwin can use it against me, unquote. So something is up. The dead tourist is a brazen vampire killing. And Domenico knows. He smelled you on the tourist. Now, Juliet's afraid.
With good reason.
He's going to wash her hair.
Oh, Lord.
Nobody wants that.
Bite her on the neck first.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, exactly. First, he's going to bite her on the neck. So she's afraid of him, obviously. And he pins her up against the wall and bites her in the neck. And as he does that, he sees not just what happened, but he sees what happened through her eyes. And he could tell not only that she got it on and then killed the tourist, he could see everything that through her eyes, through her mind, she was doing all of these things with and to Matthew, the vampire.
Long-haired Matthew.
Oh, Lord. I had to go back and watch that. That's hot.
Oh, you didn't realize it was long-haired Matthew?
No! Shut up, girl. No, I have to watch that stuff tonight. Damn.
Stop giving her spank material.
Summer? Oh, my God. Don't talk to me like that.
Don't talk at me with that mouth.
No, I can talk about... Oh, maybe not. Okay. So okay. he does that to get information and to confirm everything that Domenico said and find out exactly what she did. And then he throws her. It looked like, was it a sewer?
No, it's just I think it's either a storage room or a cell in the bottom floor of the Palazzo. But I mean, it's Venice. The bottom floor is flooded.
Yeah, it's going to have wet. Okay, got it. So he throws her in a basement, basically. Or a storage area that has water in it. Because, yeah, it's Venice. And she screams, you taught me to crave Matthew. Father, father.
Spoiler alert.
Hello. So she's his daughter and he's her father, which means, of course, vampire father, vampire daughter, that kind of relationship. And we don't know what this means yet. But from her saying, you taught me to crave Matthew, that sounds like whatever he did was successful. Because yeah. She did, and she ended up killing somebody.
I think it gets explained a little more fully in the book. So
now we're back in Scotland. Hamish has heard about the book. He pouts, and this is about demons he's talking about. He says, we matter so much less than other creatures. And then Matthew says, can we not have a political argument? Love that he's not I don't think Hamish was trying to get political, but because they're talking about the creation of species or creation of creatures, and
Matthew is in effect proving his point.
Well, that, but think about how they're left out between the two races that are heavily trying to get the book, the witches and the vampires. Each of them think that the book is a secret for them to be able to get rid of one of the other two. But none of them say it's a secret to how demons were blah, 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 blah. Demons never enter into any of the equations between the two other races.
Absolutely. I'm not saying Hamish is wrong. I don't think Hamish was trying to get political is what I'm saying, right? I think he was just expressing himself because Matthew's all, oh, vampires, oh, this witch. And Hamish was talking about, look, like the plight of the demons is like serious. And I think he says, if not in this scene, maybe a later scene, but he says in this episode, like, we don't know where we come from.
He talks about the fact that they're becoming less stable and that demon suicides and everything are on the rise.
Hamish says, it's easy for you to say, meaning let's not get into a political argument. It's easy for you to say you're not treated like a third class citizen. And Matthew says, Hamish, you practically run the city of London. Like, how is that third class?
He's the exception, not the rule.
Well, he's more like we're treated like humans, which is almost fourth class when you think about it.
And what I didn't say is during this conversation, they're playing chess.
I feel honor bound to point out, because Stephanie Eloise is not on this podcast, that those are the Lewis chessmen. So that's a shout out to Stephanie.
Yay. She'd be very happy that you shared that.
I have a PhD by proxy.
Yes, dude. Yes, you do. As they're playing, Hamish checkmates Matthew and then reminds him that there's more to the game than protecting the queen.
That becomes important later.
Yeah. Music that starts up is fast. And Matthew looks at Hamish, like he's just realized something.
Shit, I left the queen alone.
Right?
That's exactly what went through his mind.
Exactly. And definitely something. He leaves quickly. Hamish runs after him. He's like, wait, think before your next move. Like, okay, chess and life, right? Hamish says, Marcus is less of a danger to Diana than you are. It's like, think of what happened in the past to the woman you've craved. Eleanor, Cecilia. So apparently that was a D move on Hamish's part, because Matthew replies, insulted, I wish I'd never told you. Hamish says, you did.
Because you wanted me to be your conscience.
And Matthew throws back, after Cecilia, I swore to myself I would never get involved with another warm blood again. And you know that. And Hamish says, but Matt, you've never talked about another woman the way you talk about Diana Bishop. I'm just trying to protect you. If you hurt her, you'll never forgive yourself. And I couldn't bear it. Don't go back to Oxford until you're sure you can control yourself around Diana Bishop. And they have a stare off.
Yeah, he's not good at listening.
Oh my gosh. So what did we learn from that? That there's a lot there too, right? Okay, there's more to chess, more to the game, more to life, whatever, than protecting your queen, which, as Mandy said, made him have an oh moment, like, oh. And we also learn that, further supporting that they're very close, Hamish is very concerned about Matthew, about his state of mind right now. Yes. And also, we learned that Matthew has a history with warmbloods. We don't know what happened. Well, they're not together anymore, but he names two of them. So there's something there that we might hear about later on.
I find it interesting, though, that we never go into how the two of them met. And that, honestly, with the whole TV show, at least with series one, you know, for something that's called the All Souls Trilogy in real life, they completely left out All Souls College from the whole show.
No, doesn't he? He mentions it, but not later. In later, when he says, when he takes her to his house, he's like, I usually, when I'm not at All Souls, I'm here. Souls? I come. Okay. Yeah, he does mention that.
They certainly don't make a big deal about it.
No, they don't make any big deal as to why it's a big deal.
Right.
Yeah. Not in this. He does mention All Souls.
Back in Oxford, where Diana's at the stupid dean's party, like she said, she is schmoozing. A professor wants to meet her, and of course, it's Nock. And as soon as she sees him, she's like, and she grabs a drink. I loved it. And he's still pushing. He's still pushing about that book. He mentions her omission of the fact that a vampire had been following her. He doesn't tell her how he knows, and thus we don't know. But we can guess the same source, right? Probably Miss Jillian. He just goes on about how it would be such a bad thing for this book to fall into their hands, meaning the vampires. And he tells her, you're in danger. And she says, look, I can take care of myself. He disagrees.
I disagree.
I know, right? Everybody disagrees. Everybody does. But everyone thinks she's in. She can't take care of herself except for her. And then she stabs a little deeper. She says, quote, like my mother, Mr. Knox, if I've made up my mind, I don't change it.
Except for when she does. These people, I'm telling you, these characters have the hardest time making definitive statements, because every time they make definitive statements, they always change them. It's like, I never do XYZ .. until they do. It comes up several times.
Just before their party, Jillian said, I never eat biscuits.
She didn't.
She did. I read the script.
Did they cut that part?
Yeah. And then he goes, she said what she did, like, laid him low ish. And then she's like, I'm done. She goes to leave. And as she's walking away, he then goes into her head. He says, don't make me force you to recall that book. And she leaves the building. He's still in her head, and he starts to hurt her now. Her hands start to flicker a gold color, and she gets serious. I don't know what else to call it. She gets serious magic face and tells him to get out of her head. when she turns and faces and looks up at the window. And the glass in the window he's standing in front of shatters. And she's freaked out about what happened. And she goes to her apartment. And we see, as the camera kind of backs up, that Satu was there.
Yeah. This is the moment in which I realized exactly what kind of special effects budget we were working with for this show. And I lowered my expectations a little bit.
What, you mean the gold?
Yeah, and just the look on her face. And I mean, and not that I have any suggestions for how it could have been done better, because I don't. But it's like, oh, okay, this is Doctor Who level special effects. This is not Marvel movie level special effects.
Maybe next season.
Yeah, exactly. More money.
Yes, that would be awesome, Possum. Next, I'm guessing it's the next day, Knox visits with Jillian. Hey, how's Diana? And he's like, last night she performed an elemental spell. And she's like, ha ha, you're on crack. Because Diana, I don't believe you.
He's like, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me she had all this power? And she's like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? He suggests that maybe Diana has used her magic to forward her career. And that's why she's kept it a secret.
Planting seeds.
Uh-huh. And he is totally undermining their friendship. Right then, Diana comes by for a quick chat, whatever. She knocks on the door. Jillian answers it. And as she begins to talk, Knox steps into her line of sight.
And this was the stupidest move ever. He could have totally continued playing the two of them like a puppet master behind the scenes against each other if he just stayed in the kitchen.
Yeah, instead he completely undermined Jillian's credibility to Diana. So, I mean, making her useless.
Exactly, because now Diana was like, F you, and she's never going to trust her, ever going to trust her again.
But that could have been his plot to get Jillian to do more extreme things.
Exactly. He had just got done telling her maybe she used her magic to forward her career, and that's why it's a secret. And then he's doing, actually, we don't like him, but he's doing really well with planting this doubt, planting these seeds.
No, it's true, but my point is that in later episodes, I think she does some completely out of character things on behalf of the witches. On behalf of Peter Knox, things that she probably wouldn't normally do. But I think that by alienating her from her friend, she feels like the only way that she can stay with the friends that she has left is to do these coven activities that are completely not in her comfort zone.
You are right that one of the things, by him staying in the kitchen and not showing himself, he could have continued to use Jillian as a pawn, right? To at least for a bit get info from Diana for as long as that lasted, which I don't think it would have lasted very much longer. But by putting the two of them at odds, and you're right, I think by isolating her, what he does to Jillian is, I don't want to say it forces her to take sides. It's not about necessarily forcing her, but by isolating her, all she's got is her fellow witches.
Right. Well, he makes her feel less guilty about betraying Diana. He gives her rationale for it.
And so she's like, the way she sees things, even though this wasn't her choice, she's like, oh, Lord, okay, like in for a penny, in for a pound. If this has gone to pot, then like, fine, let me help them out. I'll just do all the things. Now she's reliving. Diana is, and this was some, I mean, I think Diana. Teresa. I think Teresa's a great actress. But here, it's one thing. It's been a long time since I've been in a play. My very limited experience, but I always felt that it was easier, not easy, but easier to act in a scene where you have someone, you know, giving an energy back to you, where you can kind of go off of each other. This scene is actually, it's a decent length of a scene. The camera is like on Teresa's face. She's like, she runs out. She's outside. She, you know, runs away from Jillian's home and she's just got tears in her eyes and her heart is broken. She's devastated that she's been used or lied to. And, you know, she doesn't have even this friendship now. And she's reliving her conversations with like everyone over the past few days. She realizes that's Jillian is how the information got to Peter. And everyone is telling her, Peter, Satu, and Matthew, that it's about more than the book. And she's beginning now finally to think that they're right. She's the key. She is starting to believe that she's in danger. And she goes straight to All Souls College and asks to go to Professor Claremont's rooms. And he's not there, unfortunately. But as she goes to return downstairs, he's waiting at the base of the stairs. And she smiles and he looks concerned. Now, I know it's too soon for stuff to happen, like stuff. But the first time you guys saw this episode and she turns and she's like, now, like, look, I've been beaten down. I'm ready to ask for help, or I'm ready to listen to you truly, whatever, to what you have to say, or for you to help me. And he's there at the bottom of the stairs. What did you guys think the first time you saw that?
That it was a beautiful reversal of the first time they met in the bottom, where she was up on the balcony looking down at him. And this time she's on the high ground looking down. Or actually it's the same. Sorry, not reversal. It's
a callback. Yeah.
Echo. Right. Callback of the.
That's true. And whereas the first time he was looking for her, now she is looking for him. He came back for her, yes. But she was, it's a lot different than the first time. She's more involved now. But absolutely, it's a complete echo. It was very beautiful. And when I saw him, I was like, oh, he's there. But they didn't get like all schmoozy or anything yet. So she's with him now. And they're in his rooms, and she tells him about Nox and Satu and the creatures who are looking for the book. Now, Matthew's being all vampire-y and stuff and tells her, look, please try and calm down. Your adrenaline's rather high. I can smell it, and it's like kind of doing a thing on me. It's like candy, but candy that I want to like jump you for. When she does a bit, he says, thank you. Did that make you guys laugh?
Not really.
She feels really alone there. And he asks why she came to him. And she says, I have no one else to talk to. Then she says, it was a mistake to come here. She tells him, did I make that up?
Probably.
Okay. Well, I don't usually make.
She does say
you have
a
very fertile imagination.
No, she said maybe it was a mistake.
That is true, Summer.
For me to come here.
So she says it was a mistake to come here.
Usually, you just don't hear them at all.
She said maybe it was
because it's usually you're like, oh, the music. It sounded like da da da. But what did they say? I have no idea.
So she says maybe it was a mistake to come there, and she tells Matthew what Nox said, and Matthew's all, Peter thinks witches are the bestest. Matthew's not of the same opinion. And Matthew goes to, I love this. Matthew goes to his bookshelf and he grabs a book down and hands it to her. I wonder what this could be. Matthew knew Charles Darwin personally. And he had wondered, you know, many years ago, how Darwin's theory in origins that he laid out might relate to creatures. And he opens up the book and he shows it to her, one of the pages. Now, he'd already heard rumors about a book. This is during Darwin's time. He'd already heard rumors about a book hidden from their eyes in an alchemical text. And of course, that's Ashmole 782. And he says, Ashmole, and I'm thinking he means the man Ashmole, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ashmole had an uncanny ability to find bizarre manuscripts. And Matthew has been searching for 782 since 1859. And she says, how old are you? And he's like, older than I look. Just maybe a little bit older than you look. And I thought, he tries the slyest line ever. He says, I'd like to show you my laboratory.
Right? Look back at all the pickup lines that work and don't work in the show series.
Your mama likes tea. Come have it with me.
Right? That one works.
I'd like to show you my laboratory is another one that works.
Yeah, that's true. I thought you were making fun, but no, you're right. It worked on her.
Yeah.
What else? Is there another one?
I mean, sure, later in the series. We can discuss it episode by episode.
Sure, that's funny. That is funny. Like, okay, what pickup line worked on Diana this time? Okay, that's good. So he is telling her about his lab. It links into his research on creature origins. Now, he promises he will not harm her, and off they go. And he says that he can hear her heart all the time. I thought that was very sweet. Meanwhile, back in the lab, and if you don't understand the little intonation I gave that or emphasis I gave that, if you like the show Bones, you'll know what I'm kind of making fun of. So back in the lab, they are all about creature genetics. We meet Miriam and Marcus, both vampires. And Marcus smells her.
He doesn't appear to be totally housebroken, okay?
Oh, Lord, right? Wait, that's hysterical.
He skews real young anyway, but he plays real young. Like, he never matured, at least the way that they're playing him.
And that's not the way it comes across in the book.
No.
Matthew made sure he had better manners than that.
Christ, Marcus!
Now every time, my new Summer's expletive. New rallying cry. Christ, Marcus!
It's some people say to Lacard, and I say, Christ, Marcus!
He smells her and says, oh, AB negative.
That's a demon, or the vampire pickup line that doesn't work.
That didn't work.
It doesn't work! There you go, there's one. Miriam, she don't play. She gets straight to the point.
She's like, why did you bring her here?
She says, creatures are dying out. Vampires are failing to sire. Demons are increasingly prone to madness. And he says, witches are losing their powers. He's very chivalrous. He says, look, we're going to talk about this. Here, sit down. And he pulls the chair out and all these things. And
let me give you a genetics lesson. Well, he has very pretty manners.
Well, and he's also talking to her about something she's interested in, which is science. She likes the scientific part of it. She's trying to get away from the woo-woo magic stuff, you know what I mean? So having somebody who's coming at her, not only who is a creature, but is coming to the conversation from a scientific background, I'm sure is totally a gigantic turn on for her.
Oh, Lord. That's true. Hello.
This is Diana Lady Boner.
Diana's like, you had me at Ben Van Gouda.
Does anybody else think of cheese every time?
Yes. Or Gouda. Belle Biv DeVoe. I don't know.
Gouda. Nope. Never thought of Belle Biv DeVoe.
He shows her the mitochondrial DNA pattern of a witch named Ben Van Gouda and then of Beatrice Good. So he's showing her the difference, the change over centuries about how it appears that their powers, or at least their reliance on their powers, is in decline. Basically, he's wondering or hypothesizing that, look, I have this data. It's showing that their reliance on their powers is decreasing. Is it possible that if this keeps decreasing, they will eventually become extinct?
Or at least have no powers, which is my
And at that
exist.
Point, her lady boner goes, and we're back with, we're still in Oxford, but we're back with Knox. And they're having dinner somewhere.
We're in Knoxford.
Knoxville. Yeah, Knoxford. That's better. That's good. Okay. Knox introduces Jillian to Satu and introduces her as their new representative on the congregation.
Jillian's like, oh, congratulations. That's so nice for you. You must be so proud.
And I don't know if Knox says it or if Satu says it. I didn't write that down. But we find out where she confirms. It's confirmed that Diana interests Satu very much.
But she couldn't read her.
Yes. Back with Matthew. He has a different sense of time than she does. They're walking, right? And he's talking about vampire sense of time versus basically everyone else's, creatures, humans, everything, sense of time. And he uses climate change as an example. He's like, look, I've been around for a long time, so I can definitely notice it. So these things, whether it's witches dying out or witches becoming extinct, right? Or the vampires becoming extinct eventually, whatever it is. Yeah, it's not going to happen tomorrow. But I have, it concerns me because it affects the creatures, but me as a vampire, I've been around so long, I have a lot different sense of time and its passing than Warmbloods would, because I have a much better view of things because I actually can see it. Whereas those with much more finite lives don't have this expanse of time to compare it backwards against.
Can we take just a moment to just think about what a long-haired Matthew Good skating on the Thames would look like? Because... You know, I just need to take a moment to appreciate the beauty that I'm sure
So is that like a moment of silence?
Exactly. I'm sure it would have been very graceful.
Ginger, can you do it?
I'm giving you a silent view.
That's right, I was going to say.
I'm just kidding. Oh, Lord, Mandy, now you're giving me ideas. Ooh, I'm going to have to go watch that stupid scene tonight. Damn you. Yes. And he tells Diana that she should try not being frightened of your magic. He says desire and fear are the two things that keep the world turning. And she says, one of the taglines of the book series and television series, magic is desire made real. And she is quoting her aunt. He is walking her to her college, to her apartments, and he says goodbye. And as he walks away, she offers out, the book's a palimpsest, old words hidden under new. It was heavy. It smelled odd.
Three pages were cut out. The only page I saw showed a baby floating in an upside-down vessel. Probably the alchemical child, although I've never seen it represented like that before. Unquote. So he's shown trust in her, bringing her into his lab, introducing her to people in his life, those people who are his family, into his inner sanctum. He trusts her with this knowledge, and she is finally also opening up. She repays this trust with trust of her own and tells him all, literally all she knows about the book. And to this, Matthew says, thank you. And now that she's returned the trust, he feels he can show his other interest. Mm-hmm. He takes her hand, turns it palm up, and kisses her wrist.
Lingeringly kisses mm-hmm. her wrist.
Oh, very much so. She definitely feels something. She feels it, whatever that is. She feels him.
My version of what it would be is different than what you are implying, because if she feels it from that position, he must have a gigantic it.
Summer Wiseman. Summer whatever. I didn't say that. I don't mean that.
You said she feels it.
Yeah, like the special something.
I think she got a little tingly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Her witchy sense, her spidey sense. She's getting all like electromagnetic or whatever. But she's definitely not only opened up to him and trusting, beginning to trust him now.
She hasn't opened up to it yet.
Oh, Lord, Summer.
And won't in this one.
And if you listen closely, now I am not saying, as a matter of fact, I listened to it a few times to make sure I wasn't making this up, because apparently sometimes I definitely miss things sometimes. But if you listen closely, it sounds like the sound that she makes when he is kissing her wrist, it's not the same, but it sounds very similar to when the book sighed. It's not as long, but it sounds similar to me. Now, I never noticed it in the original.
Take your word for it, because I didn't notice it.
I didn't notice it in any original viewings. It was only as I was watching it, like with a, I can't say with an eagle eye, because I don't have an eagle eye. I don't even have an eagle ear, but I have more of an eagle ear than I do an eagle eye. It's about, so I don't know. Well, yeah, I watched it on the Sundance app. So if you want to go hear what I'm talking about, which is the potential sigh, the thing that sounds like a sigh, it's 41:28. Now then he walks away, he leaves her. And I love the music that comes up. And that is the ending of 102.
And if you're watching it as you're streaming, it immediately starts on episode 103.
You can walk away. You're a stronger person than we are.
So I think after 102, no, we took a break between 101 and 102 today to make scones and tea.
Of course you did.
And then I think we went straight from 2 to 3.
We took a halftime break after 104.
And we took a halftime break at 104. And then we just blazed on through 5 through 8.
Ending up with our tempranillo.
Yep. Toasting the last episode.
Well, the next time you hear from us, it will be talking about 103. So thank you guys. First of all, thank you, Mandy, so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Always, of course. And thank you, Summa. And
thank you,
Ginger,
for letting me be on the show.
Summer, shut your mouth. Thank you, Summer. In case you didn't know, because we don't say it every episode, the Outlander podcast is my fault. The All Souls podcast is Summer's fault.
It's true.
So thank you, Sam.
You're welcome.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to our guest, Mandy, again. And we would love to help you join us, continue the conversation in our Facebook community. And you can find that at allsoulspod.com/group. So thank you guys so much for joining us. We look forward to our next magical episode.